Hello and welcome to the Chengdu Living Podcast. This is Dan, and for our latest entry in our Interviews with Entrepreneur series, I am joined by the men from Aquafood, Ari and Matt. So,
hello.
Why don't you introduce yourselves? Introduce yourselves, guys.
Hi, I'm Ari Daniel Jadwin. I'm the managing director at Aquafood.
And I'm Matt Tacco. I'm in charge of business development right now.
Cool. So Aquafood is an aquaculture company. What exactly does that mean?
We, in our latest incarnation, like to consider ourselves an integrated fish-selling company. So we sell, Matt, you can help me on this, we sell ultra-premium, high-end...
Highest quality salmon trout here in Chengdu.
Yeah. Salmon trout, cool. And it is fish the only thing that you deal in?
No, we also deal with the food for fish. So one of the reasons we're so confident in the quality of our product is one, because we're really nice and charming people, but also because we control all of the inputs. We know every ingredient that the fish eats ever and all the raw materials. And we work with the farms, and we're out on the farms most of our time.
So the farms that you're talking about, are these farms that you own, or farms that existed around here when you already arrived? And maybe you can talk about the area that these farms encompass.
Sure. So we work with farms in Western China, and that's for the most part in Sichuan, and we cross over into some of the other nearby territories. But we really focus on this, the Sichuanese mountain range, which is sort of the beginning on its way up to the Himalayan or the Tibetan plateau. Mm-hmm. There's an abundance of really high quality, unpolluted water, which has ideal temperatures for raising these types of fish. And so there are a lot of existing farms out there. Mm-hmm. A lot of these farms are brand new within the last... Since 2008, mm-hmm. There was a big earthquake in Sichuan, and so all of these farms are in the disaster relief or earthquake zone. And it's pretty interesting how that came about, because after 2008, well, I don't know what the numbers are. It's something that I think like 70,000 people died. It was just lots of destruction, and it caught a lot of national attention.
Right.
And so for the first time, the central government started pouring tons of money into basic infrastructure. Mm-hmm. And so a lot of these places, it was the first time they ever had roads. And there's a huge portion of the population was left with nothing, and they had access to a bunch of capital. So it was sort of... this opportunity arose. Well, there's a whole bunch of poor people. They're up in the mountains. How can they make money? Well, there's this great natural resource, which is an abundance of flowing water at these perfect temperatures for raising these types of very high-value fish. So a lot of these people got started, just so more and more of these farms started cropping up.
And that's amazing. So a lot of these fisheries are a pretty recent phenomenon, and... Mm-hmm. And how did you find out about them? Were you following the news and said, oh, there must be a ton of fisheries opening up in Western China because of the earthquake, or was it a little bit more complicated than that?
Well, actually, when I was a boy, I had a vision, and I was able to see that this is how things would play.
No. Fascinating. Fascinating. We have a prophet in our midst.
Just one thing you touched on, it is very new. These species have been in... So, salmon trout have mm-hmm. been in China no more than 15 years, I want to say.
15, wow. 15.
I think I read something the other day that in 1994 they started in Shanghai. It's a really very, very short amount of time.
Yeah, I mean, it's and these are not native. Mm-hmm. They're an introduced species. And all over the world, the UN, by the way, loves, for example, these kinds of fish, mm-hmm. Salmon trout.
Why
because
do they love
them? There's a problem with mountain populations everywhere where they're generally really, really poor. Mm-hmm. And it's not like you can grow a lot, like big fields of stuff. You can't set up factories. How to employ, what to do about these people. Mm-hmm. That's a huge question. And so what's great about these fish is people, they're really high quality. They're good for you. And people will pay money for them. And so you can have small-scale farmers that are actually generating a significant amount of money that can help transform, like, the mountainside.
Okay. So I want to ask about who the consumers are for these fish, but
sure.
I'll wait a little bit for that. So why aren't these mountainside farmers opting for more conventional farming livestock, like cows, chickens, pigs?
So great. One on the mount. First of all, those are expensive to get started doing.
Mm-hmm.
My understanding is that the licenses, applying for the licenses for raising those kinds of animals are very difficult. The government's not issuing them as much as they were. Just to be clear, so what that means is smaller scale pig farming, chicken farming, cow farming, or cattle farming, I should say, is definitely on the decline in mm-hmm. China. And I'm pretty sure that's a global trend. But in China, these farmers are now facing they're more fully facing the costs of production, which includes pollution. I think it was a year ago, something like that. The Shanghai had a whole bunch of a flotilla of visitors of a bunch of dead pigs that were left in the river.
I remember reading about that. I think anybody who read about that has a pretty serious image burned in their memory of that. So what did that indicate in general, that particular story, for people who are maybe not too familiar with it?
I think there was a reaction inside China that to move against these producers were polluting, that these producers were not, they weren't doing a very good job. They were mm-hmm. So sort of the larger reaction is the government's making it more expensive for any of these producers to operate. They're mm-hmm. making it harder to get the licenses. And as a result, you're seeing more and more fish farms crop up. And so it came at a sort of a fortuitous time that there's a very great fish farming land, which mm-hmm. is this mountain range that we're talking about, right at the time when the easiest and cheapest and best thing to get into was fish farming.
So how did you get involved with these fish farmers? Tell us what the process was for finding them in the first place, introducing them to your business and what you could offer them, and how your relationship has evolved through that.
So I got into this. I was looking to start a business, and I wanted to be in Western China, just because I thought it was an exciting, a booming place.
Mm-hmm.
And I was always personally fascinated by food. And food production, where the stuff we eat comes from. And I think part of that was based on being in China and just a sort of a collective growing obsession mm-hmm. with what are we actually putting into our bodies, and people wanting more and more safe stuff. So I was introduced to this from a very different angle, from a big macro problem, which was what fish were eating. There were more and more fish farms that were being set up in China, and they're globally, and more mm-hmm. and more people are eating fish. What these fish farms require to function is the fish food,
mm-hmm.
and the bulk of that fish food is made up of wild fish, especially for these higher value species, these carnivorous species.
Mm. So farm fish are eating wild fish.
Yes. Well, not the cheap fish. So like carp and tilapia, they can generally survive pretty well on vegetarian diets. Mm-hmm.
But you're raising carnivorous fish
right.
At the farms.
And in China, a lot of the fish that you'll see a lot of the fish farms you'll see sometimes are doing some pretty innovative means of feeding, where mm-hmm. they'll just, for like what we call the trash fish, they'll sometimes just dump in sewage, like human waste.
For our listeners, tell us, which are the trash fish?
So, I mean, that'll be like carp, tilapia, things like that. It's not to say
it's not widespread. It's not everybody who's raising those fish are feeding them trash.
It's getting a lot better. It's getting a lot better. Part of it's because the consumers are becoming a lot more educated and demanding more and better quality.
Mm-hmm.
Also just innovations in terms of feed, and a lot of Chinese companies are getting a lot bigger. They can now scale up their production of like cheap vegetarian diets that don't rely on other protein sources or human fecal matter, mm-hmm. all sorts of really wonderful developments. All
right, so break down your business proposition to the fish farmers. What do you have to offer them?
Great. So I was interested, like I was saying, in this protein problem. I was interested because the carnivorous species, they haven't cracked that yet. It's a problem that remains, which is how, if people are moving, and here's the trend, people are moving more and more to these high-value species. And these species require heavy protein, heavy fat diets. That's why we like salmon so much. It's because it's fatty, because it's got the omega-3 and omega-6 fatty acids.
And those are the good fatty acids, right? Those are the best.
That's why we like fish. That's why we think they're healthy. It's because they've got these things inside. To sort of the fuel to make the car go, in this analogy, is going to be these wild fish, mostly from South America, and now they're looking for other places. But they're overfished. It's getting more and more expensive, and they're simply running out. The supply is fixed and on the decline, and the demand is growing exponentially. So I thought it would be a real neat idea if I could convince a bunch of farmers that they could be on the front lines on this battle, on this crusade for sustainable aquaculture.
And how excited about it were they?
They weren't that excited about it. They didn't really care.
So were you... personally giving this pitch, did you take a Chinese translator with you? How were you doing it?
I was personally delivering the pitch. I was personally delivering this great golden insight into what the future could look like, and they balked, and they just like sort of stared at me.
What was their reason for balking?
They didn't care. It didn't fit into their agenda. They're a farmer on the side of the mountain like 5 years ago, 7 years ago. Their entire world was shaken. Literally, everything was destroyed. The roads are gone. Maybe half their family was killed. Their previous business is no longer like functional. They had a pig farm, but then they got shut down because they were just dumping all the pig waste into the rivers, and now the government is not allowing that to happen anymore. And so they're just trying to make some money.
But your proposition would save them money and in turn help them make more money, right?
Yes, it would.
So why what was the difficulty in getting them to understand that and to buy that idea?
So there were three steps. I started with sustainability. Turns out these guys didn't care. Then I decided to move the conversation to, okay, don't worry about sustainability. Let's just talk about efficiency. Let's talk about getting you to reduce like the expensive inputs that are on your farm. Because each of these is like, they're little factories. They're fish factories. And I wanted to say, if you use a higher quality ingredient now or higher quality input now, you don't have to use as much of it. And it promotes all sorts of other benefits. The fish are going to stay healthier. They won't get sick as much. You won't have to give them as much medicine. You won't have these outbreaks of disease. You also won't be polluting and hurting the environment or hurting the people downstream. These are a lot of nice ideas to me.
And these are all problems that they actually have to deal with.
These are all problems they actually have to deal with. However, they're a little long term and they're a little abstract. What these guys couldn't get over was the fact, yeah, but you got a bag of feed there that's like twice as much as this bag over here.
And they didn't realize that this purchase right now would save them money down the line.
Right. I mean, and we're not even talking that far down the line. Like within 30 days, they can see the difference. 30 really? To 60 days. And so I just remember this one time a farmer's like, you're still not getting it. Let me show you. Let's go over to my shack. So we go over to his shack. That's where he stores his feed. And he says, you're telling me, if I gave you whatever it was, like if I gave you 50,000 RMB, 100,000 RMB, right now it costs me 100,000 RMB to fill a shack with feed, with bags of feed. You're telling me if I gave you 100,000 RMB that I'd only be able to fill two-thirds of the shack. How is that a deal? And I explain, like, well, yeah, but you don't, your job isn't to fill a shack. You make money by selling fish that aren't dead, that aren't diseased, that are, that people like.
So you ran into some problems with your initial pitch. What, how did you change your pitch to start getting customers? Because right now your business is pretty successful, right? You guys are doing well.
We're growing, and I mean, I'm excited. I'm still here. I'm not running.
Right. Cool. So what changed about the pitch that got them more on your side, more singing your tune or whatever?
Was we had to really boil things down and make it simple, because it was too caught up in my idealism and what I wanted to do, and I didn't understand what the farmers were really interested in or what made them tick. Mm-hmm. And at one point, I don't know what it was, but something clicked. And I said, wait a minute, you're mostly concerned with selling your fish. So if I can solve that problem for you, can you solve my problem for me? Which, translation, I buy your stuff, you buy my stuff. Okay? Okay.
Who's winning there?
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins.
Everybody wins. I mean, so actually, there was another instance where there was one farmer I got to agree to start using the feed. And he one time called me up after a short period of time, screaming and cursing and very upset. He was what had happened was, at the stage of growth of his fish, normally, had he not been using, been working with us, about 50% of his fish would be dead. And he was furious because that didn't happen, that only maybe 10% were dead. And so he had this surplus of 40% of the fish.
Oh gosh, and what a huge problem.
Well, what he had uncovered was a nefarious plot by me to cheat him out of more money, because in his eyes, what I was really doing was I was making sure his fish didn't die so that he had to spend more money to buy more feed to feed his fish. And he was mad that I was cheating him. And so,
how long did it take you to understand that was why he was angry?
I don't know.
You didn't anticipate that this is a thing that people would be incensed about.
No. And it just, when it did, it was like, it was a weird reaction. It was a very visceral reaction. I was sort of laughing and crying and wetting my pants all at once. But finally I said, wait. So the problem is too many fish are alive, right? Yeah, that's right. You got it. Okay. Easy. Let's take those 40% extra fish and we'll just throw them in the woods. I'm not going to throw them in the woods. I was like, okay, so then give them to me. I'm not going to give them to you. Okay, so what's the additional? Well, I don't know how to sell this many fish. Normally, I would stock the pond full, 50% more, so that I could sell 50% of those fish. Now I don't know what to do. So then that was a huge contributor for me unlocking that I had to help solve this problem. So
you screwed up the ecosystem. Now things aren't dying as fast.
That's right. That's right. Exactly. No, that's exactly what I'd done. And so then that's how this sort of transaction came to light.
Wow.
I buy your stuff, you buy my stuff. Okay.
Cool. And so now that we're kind of talking about consumers, I assume the people in these villages are not the ones who are buying the fish.
Until now, a lot of them were, because there's a lot of the Nongjia Le, the countryside, what do you call them? Le. The countryside little hotels, sort of bed and breakfast type places, where people go out to for the weekend or a day to have it's really pretty out there. They go and they eat like food that's all grown very within, 15, 20 feet.
We would say in America, farm to table.
Farm to table.
Yeah.
Places. Yeah.
So is that's not the case anymore, though?
No, it still is. So a lot of them were being sold to these guys, to the hyper local market, and the rest were being sold as live fish to different distributor markets or.
So you're really involved in every aspect of these fisheries business now. You're getting them the food to keep their fish alive. You're helping them sell them now. You're helping coordinate buyers for them.
So
and you're also dealing with the logistics of getting them to the buyers, right?
Yeah, and there's another thing, which is we're actually getting involved in farm management. Which is, you can't just sell them an expensive feed because they are only used to using really garbage product.
Mm-hmm.
They need to understand how to use it. And it's a very, very different situation. Mm-hmm. So it relates heavily to managing the farm. I mean, to knowing what the temperature of the water is. Until now, mm-hmm. these guys have been eyeing it. They've been looking at the water and somehow magically knowing what the temperatures are.
Mm-hmm. So now that you're, the Aquafood name is associated with these products, you need to make sure that everything is clean, right, and managed properly.
That's not the motivation. The motivation is these farmers they're basically sitting on a gold mine, and they're turning out a very, very, very poor quality product and not a lot of it. And so the idea is, guys, my agenda is to pushing sustainability, environmental sustainability. But the idea is, if they adopt some of these more sustainable methods, they could be producing a much higher quality product for a lower cost and making more money.
One example of this, when this happened already, we've got a distributor in Guangzhou,
mm-hmm.
and he was selling, but before Ari introduced this distributor to our farmer, Wangge,
mm-hmm.
He was selling salmon trout in Guangzhou. And then we've introduced him now to our best grower, Wangge.
Mm-hmm.
And Ari, you can finish. I mean, he's comparing the two, and he can't sell his old product anymore. Because,
really?
Because his Israeli...
Yeah, yeah, no. His current customers, they say, no, we don't want that garbage anymore.
What kind of distributor is this?
This is just a fish distributor. So he sells in southern China, mm-hmm. like to, I think, retail chains and
mm-hmm.
Maybe some restaurant chains as well. And so they're, I mean, it's the taste, it's the color, it's the quality. So
that's amazing.
Yeah. And so all these restaurant goers are reacting and saying, and so what's happening is these guys are now willing to pay a higher price for, they're willing to pay a premium for these higher quality fish. And this is, I mean, we're stumbling into something really amazing here, because if we can go around and go out of our way to give the farmers more money for their product, for doing something like more sustainable and like more environmentally sustainable, mm-hmm. then why would they do it any other way?
Right, right. And so have you converted them completely, like ideologically, or are they just thinking like, this is better money for me, so we're just going to keep doing it your way, or are they sort of on board with the sustainable aspect of it, which is what your original pitch was?
No, so they're not keepers of the light quite yet.
Well, you know what, that doesn't seem to be a huge problem. I mean, if whatever way you get them to do it, and whatever way they can get a more valuable product and earn more money, then it doesn't seem to be a huge problem.
Over time, they will understand. And so with this one of our big farmers, we're now sort of moving into more hands-on relationships in terms of what's going on at his farm. We want to get a lot more management tools in place. So he is tracking a lot more data, and so he can understand, have a lot more a much clearer picture of mm-hmm. what actually he's doing and where the problems are and how we can tweak them to really generate to grow a lot more fish, do it faster and more cheaply. And at the same time, he can be then selling for a premium. So on the sales side, on the customer side, what we're developing now is access to like high-end consumers in and around China.
Mm-hmm.
So and where we're looking at now, what we found the most exciting was really with just direct consumers. And what we really want to do is now expand to online selling.
What is the environment for that like at the moment?
Beautiful question. You got it. You're helping me a lot, because I'm a very disorganized mind, and thank you.
Well, it helps that we stop this interview halfway and we're doing it over again. That's but true. Yeah, tell me what the online environment is. Let's keep this ball rolling.
But before we even get to that, let's talk about what the environment is right now. So mm-hmm. people are buying salmon, imported salmon, And it's coming from Norway, Scotland, Chile. Scotland is a bit, Norway. It's on shaky grounds because for political reasons, you have a lot of imports starting and stopping, and so it's actually forced because of China. It's forced a lot of these Norwegian producers to then buy up a bunch of farms in Scotland or set up. So now they're sending in Scottish product. Here's why it makes sense, maybe to your listeners or just people in general. The salmon that's coming from Norway and from Chile, the logistics involved in getting it to China...
They ain't swimming here.
They're not swimming here, that's right. They are flying them in, and if it were anywhere else, it would be fine. It would get to the customer very quickly.
Mm-hmm.
Here in China, especially in Western China... It's going to be, here's what's funny. I used to say to people, it's got to be like 3, 4, maybe 5 days. Turns out I was way off. It's like 8 days, maybe 10 days before it's just going to even show up to a distributor. And then it's going to be a few days before it gets to the market. And so in Chengdu, for example, you've got the big fish market and they're buying direct from Norway. And it takes a lot of days to arrive. Clearing customs is the biggest challenge. And then you have this inconsistent cold storage. So these are fresh fish. These are not frozen. So especially in the summer, you have a problem when the refrigerator where they store the fish is very cool. And outside where all the workers are playing mahjong is not very cool. It's very sweaty and uncomfortable. So simple fix. We just keep the refrigerator door open to cool off the outside room. And so a lot of times, one of the big challenges is say, yeah, but we get the imported stuff, and it's coming from Norway. So whether it's foreigner or Chinese, they both defer to the foreign imported product as being better.
Mm-hmm.
But they're getting these bacteria ridden flesh pools, and I mean you can taste it even at the high end restaurants. It's just not that fresh.
It just tastes like bacteria ridden flesh pool.
Well, that was my mom's nickname for me as a growing up.
It's got a nice ring to it.
It does.
It's got a nice ring to it. So that's your main competition, these imported fish? Or these have been your main competition in the markets?
In some ways, yeah, because it's people that want to have like a high value, high-end product. And right now, like a lot of people are buying imported salmon.
So it's high value, high end, but it's not high quality, is what you're saying.
It was high quality. It's arriving at their door. It's not high quality.
Right.
And there's a certain unsophistication about the market. They think that, if it's pink, it's salmon, you're good to go. However, I mean, we've just found that people react extremely positively to the fish. They freak out about it, whether it's chefs or whether it's individual buyers. I remember we had one delivery right in the beginning to a chef, and he's like, holy shit, this is fresh. Like, yeah, we know.
That's got to be very encouraging.
It was. He's like, yeah, but you don't understand. Every time they say it's fresh, they lie. It's not fresh. It's never fresh. This is actually fresh. Like, yeah, we actually killed it this morning, and now it's here. And so, I mean, what it allows us to do is, within one day, either same day, one day, for some of the further places outside China, maybe 2 days before it, you have farm to table in the U.S. Here we have farm to chopstick.
That's very cool. So, what is the what's the push on the online market looking like?
So, the push on the online market is this is now a new frontier. Mm-hmm. We realize that individuals they're really willing to this is an underserved market. All my friends, I was really surprised at the number of just my friends from my own network who were interested in this. They're like, well, I'm terrified of what I'm eating. Or like, since I've come to China, I don't eat meat anymore because I'm too scared. So I've started eating a lot of fish. But mm-hmm. like, it's not that good, and it's, you know,
and it's not all that much safer, apparently.
And I mean, the big thing too is if you're going to be paying like top premium prices for something that's just not fresh, like fish is not one of the things you'd like to have
be yeah.
old.
I've got to ask, I'm sure the listeners want to know from somebody who is in this world, what is the regulatory field like for fisheries and for imports? Is it non-existent? Because it sounds like it's pretty lax.
No. Imports is very, the regulatory sort of mechanism or force is strong.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of requirements. It's not easy to do.
Mm-hmm.
It's just the problem is once it gets inside, you know, the guy who's got the... The problem is you've got a guy driving a truck, a refrigerated truck, and maybe he wants to shave off a couple bucks and save some money. So the second he pulls out, he turns off the refrigerator to save on the electricity.
And there's no way to regulate that, I guess.
No. Or, again, where they're storing it. Mm-hmm. They're sitting around playing mahjong in the summer heat, and why would they open the refrigerator to cool off?
So there's nothing at this lower, smaller level to make sure that what you're getting is fresh. So it sounds like domestic product is the way to go.
Well, what's interesting, I think, is here's the dream, and why what we're doing, why what excites me is that over time you're going to have so the trash fish we spoke about.
Mm-hmm.
People are going to be eating more and more high-value fish. They're going to be eating more fish. They move away from the countryside to city. They shower more. They use more water. They're using electricity. They have cars now. They're using gas. They're consuming just everything a lot more.
Mm-hmm.
They're also eating a lot more protein. Their diets absolutely change.
You're talking about China.
In China in particular. Yeah. By the way, some fun numbers. 61% of the world's farmed fish in China, and the average consumption of just fish per year in China is double the global average.
Wow.
And these are based on the UN FAO, Food and Agriculture Organization, figures.
Mm-hmm.
So they eat lots of fish, they're eating lots more, and the dream is, which is starting to become a reality, people move away from these lower cost, really, really cheap, garbage-eating fish, and they move towards a much more higher value fish.
Mm-hmm.
And so what we're interested in, the sort of the longer term picture, is you don't have where Norway and Scotland and Chile are not going to be able to satisfy the demand. Now, any of the European salmon producers think I'm nuts, think I'm absolutely crazy, because they're like, that's 2 million tons. You're talking about the production. But I still am committed to this vision, which is even that stupidly large amount of product will not satisfy what the Chinese need. Not only that, as people are getting, what we're seeing is just the fuel of, like, people wanting to know what their food is, people want to know what's inside, and people wanting, like, fresh.
Mm-hmm.
That's gonna trump the idea or the fascination with import as trumping everything. Also, I touched on earlier, all the farms that we work with are in this disaster relief zone.
Mm-hmm.
So for a lot of people do like that story. And we were kind of surprised to find that the Chinese were so moved or motivated to, like, have their purchasing decisions sort of have a positive social impact.
Yeah, I mean, you don't really hear about that kind of initiative or that spin on the story about a growth of a market in China. You may hear about that in other places, but nothing really comes to mind when I think about that kind of story here in China. So that is cool, and I can understand why they get behind it, especially because that was such a huge event in Western Chinese life. So what's the scope of the operation now, and what are your hopes for the scope?
The hope for the scope is dope. Sorry.
You couldn't pass up on that.
Yeah, I couldn't. So we want to, I mean, part of what I was just touching on about online growth,
mm-hmm.
is, it gets into a lot bigger numbers. Again, because remember that I never anticipated being in fish selling. That's never where this got started.
Mm-hmm.
And we found a lot of surprising success on the fish selling side and a lot of support from the customers and the repeat business that we have. I mean, there's one customer in particular who's like keeps giving us more and more money.
Mm-hmm.
Every time we make an order, he's like, "You're just not charging enough." And I mean, it is expensive for us to deliver and do this. I mean, this is expensive for us, and it's expensive for the consumers.
Mm-hmm.
But people understand that are starting to use it that, wow, this is really a different story. Mm-hmm. This is a really different, extremely high quality product. Also, I don't know, to be honest, how exciting it is to other people, but to me, it's awesome that we're really sort of remapping what's happening in this countryside on these farms, because right now we're able to pay farms more money than they get otherwise. And sort of where this, the big vision too is, these guys, remember, this is a new species, this is a new business, these farmers haven't been doing it for very long.
Mm-hmm.
For them to take on any sort of bad or unsustainable practices would be equally as effortful if they were to take on sustainable practices. So it's going to be the same amount of energy, the same amount of investment to go either way.
Mm-hmm.
And so our goal is to absolutely just ruthlessly dominate with this hidden sustainable agenda, so that is the prevalent method. And we're just saying, hey, farmers, this is how you make money. You're going to make more money by doing these things.
So as you guys begin to scale and your customers begin to grow, how do you keep from creating these larger scale farms that maybe are harder to regulate? I mean, right now you're dealing with a lot of individual smaller scale farms. Am I right?
So we maybe have a different approach, which is for us, the bigger the farm is, the more easy it is to convince them of our value and the value of moving towards like a more sustainable approach, simply because they look much more carefully at their costs and they can understand like longer picture and how they won't just look at the, but this bag is more expensive than this bag, because they understand.
Because they don't have just a single shack that they're trying to fill with feed.
That's right.
Okay, so that's really fascinating. So maybe you could break down what is like the range of these operations that you're dealing with. What is the smallest one? What is the largest one?
Absolutely. So the smallest farm that we're dealing with is produces about 50 tons of fish a year, and the largest that we're dealing with. The largest that we're like fully working with is about 250 to 300 tons a year.
Mm-hmm.
And some of the ones that we're talking to now, are much, much bigger,
mm-hmm.
3,000 to 8,000 tons a year.
Is there any fear among these smaller fisheries that they will get dropped by the wayside, as you begin to do business with more and larger fisheries, or are they not even aware of, the other people that you're dealing with?
Yeah, they're absolutely afraid. Some of them are like the more paranoid, and I'm very sympathetic with any sort of paranoia.
Mm-hmm.
Among them will say, "Yeah, but your model, like basically, yeah, why wouldn't you just drop me later on? And if you just link up with somebody who can like outprice me forever, or if you're going to be selling all their fish." And the short answer is, I mean, right now we haven't gotten anywhere close to that problem. Right now the problem is we don't have enough fish to satisfy the demand, just plain and simple. Because,
mm-hmm.
as Matt pointed out a minute or so ago, the people that are starting to buy the fish that come out of our system,
mm-hmm.
or our approach, are asking for more and more and more, and we just don't have enough.
So how do you go about finding new fisheries? How does that happen?
It's really not easy, and one of the things I learned very early on was a great indicator that I was on the right track was if somebody told me I was on the wrong track, especially in China. Because consistently people say, there's no farms there, you're wasting your time.
And so you're going there.
Right, exactly. And so I was like, okay. Just in China, in this industry, and it's just... it's very conservative. It's very conservative. People have been doing things a similar way for a very long period of time. People have been making money in a very similar way for a long period of time.
Mm-hmm.
And the fact that we're doing anything different consistently invites heavy criticism, especially from like lots of Chinese. And every time, I'm saying that for me, the best litmus test of if I'm on the right track is when somebody says, you don't understand China. You don't know what you're doing. Awesome.
So then it later comes to convincing them that you do know what you're doing.
No, no, no. I don't have to convince them. It's great because these are my potential competition. If they think what I'm doing is stupid and a waste of time, let them think that. Great. Terrific. And by the way, it is. There's no money in this business. It's a terrible idea. I've inherited a lot of money and I decided to waste it all. This is how I'm doing it. So for anybody else who's interested in getting into this space. But just in finding the farms, what we had to do was... a lot was on internet. A lot was on Google Maps and just tracking rivers very manually.
Really?
Looking for things that looked like farms.
That's kind of fascinating. And that's led you to some big successes?
I mean, a lot of our customers we found that way just showing up.
And have you been able, through certain fisheries, like, is there a network? Or was there a network in existence? Like, one fishery would be able to point you to another one? Or were they sort of disconnected from each other and you're creating a web?
So I guess we are creating a web, and the web is us. And what we're doing is, so there are some connections, because sometimes they'll call each other if there's like a disease and they don't know what to do.
Okay.
Or if like there was just recently a farm where there was near a lot of these farms, because there's so much water, there's a lot of hydroelectric power plants.
Mm.
And there was one that I don't know exactly what happened. I'm going to go out on Sunday to see the damage. But there was an explosion. Something I don't understand. Something bad happened. The guy was really excited and didn't have time to talk. But it was like... The basically a whole bunch of fish got electrocuted. There was some power line that went into the.
So you got to sell.
Well, no, I don't think those can be. I don't think those can be sold. Maybe they can. You want some? You want a few tons?
If you got them on discount, maybe I'll inspect them. But so this is kind of interesting. So are you? All about. I've only met you and Matt. I don't know what the scale of the company is, but do you normally approach things like this? Like, if a fishery calls you and tells you something's happened, you'll be going out there personally?
No. So it usually is. If it can be me, it's great. But we have a team of like first responders.
Cool.
In the different areas, because some of these places are going to be like 13-hour train ride plus another 7-hour car ride.
Oh wow! So they are pretty far flung at this point.
They're far apart. And there's usually like one. Everything is, once I'm there, it can be like 3 or 4 days worth of visits. But we try to talk to them as much as possible. Also, we try to share just like tips or just new management practices that we see on farms. Mm-hmm. There's one kind of parasite that was showing up on certain farms in like the southwest part of Sichuan, and one farmer was chopping up garlic and spicy peppers, and that was fixing it. And I spoke to, so I have a big network of like Western fish experts, and they were blown away by this. They had no idea that could work.
Wow.
Yeah.
So that was a truly effective. That's kind of like TCM. That's some traditional Chinese medicine in the fishery industry.
Yeah. No.
Have you encountered anything else like shocking or surprising like that in your adventures in the fishery industry?
Well, I was just in the U.S. looking at a high intensity farm.
What part of the U.S.?
I was in Florida. I was at in Sarasota. It's the Moat Research Facility.
Cool. I'm familiar with Sarasota.
Okay, I am too now. For my first time, it was really nice actually. And they have a sturgeon facility for caviar.
Uh-huh.
So a lot of the farms we work with are caviar producers too.
Oh wow,
that's a whole other thing.
Sounds good.
But what they were doing, which was really cool, was they had molasses in the water, and molasses helped with like reducing the ammonia in the water. There's one thing that sort of farms outside of China do really well is they have a lot. They're just a lot more densely populated with fish. They've higher concentrations of fish. So the same space that a farm, the same size of a farm here in China might produce 75 tons. In Denmark or the U.S. or in Israel, which is outstanding aquaculture, you'll have like maybe 500 tons of.
And that's better because the output is greater, obviously, but is that better in any other way?
Well, to the farmer, yeah. To the farmer, because their cost of production goes way down.
Mm-hmm.
Their And I mean, they're making a lot more money. What's interesting in all these environments or all these markets or these places, you'll have a much heavier hand in government in terms of regulation.
I see.
What's interesting is these guys that might, the same small place, they might have a bunch of packed fish, but the health requirements are much, much higher and much better, as well as the environmental impact are much higher. So one of the things that we do is that we implement our own sort of standards, which are you can't use antibiotics, and all medicines, we don't sell medicines or anything like that, but you have to come and check with us. Because a lot of what farmers are doing is, well, the fish medicines maybe are expensive, so I got a good deal on pig antibiotics, so I'm going to use those.
So, I mean, so how are your standards informed?
So the standards are informed. I work with a few standards agencies outside, like, that are U.S. or U.K. based, and that's just to exchange, like, ideas on what sort of standards make sense. And then I work with a bunch of research facilities about what are smart things, what's low-hanging fruit. Because a lot of these standards agencies, they want to have the end. They just, all they can see is the end goal. If it's not that, then they're disappointed. But I just want some achievements. So one is, how much are they polluting? So we say, we check your water outflows, and that you cannot pollute more than this much. And which is a huge, huge difference.
And what's the pushback been on those types of standards that you're imposing on them?
Well, the truth is, a lot of times we don't even tell them; we just do it for them, and they don't know. For example, once they start using the feed, they don't have to use as much feed. I don't want to get too technical, but if the feed is higher quality, if you're eating a higher quality ingredients, and if you're getting more bang for your buck, you don't have to eat as much. And if it's very digestible, the fish absorbs all that good stuff inside, then they're going to be pooping less of it out and dirtying up the water less and less. If they're using cheap stuff, you got to put a lot in, a lot's coming out, the water gets really dirty. It also impacts the health of the fish. And then they're taking that and just dumping it back into rivers. And so what we're doing is we have these like set standards, and then only if it's a problem will we raise it to the farmer, but normally we just sort of secretly do it.
And from an ethical standpoint, this isn't that big of a deal because you're not increasing their costs and you're not impacting the product in a negative way. Right?
No. Right, absolutely.
And so you're just doing this behind the scenes because of those positive reasons, and you don't have to deal with the pushback, correct?
Well, it's not even a pushback issue. They'll just be like, well, but it doesn't, I don't have to pay more for it. Why are you even talking to me about it? Just.
So they would be saying yes. You figure anyways.
Well, yeah. So the message and the communication to them until they're fully on board is we're going to make you more money, and we show them every step of the way. A lot of these guys too don't even know if they're making money or losing money, which by the way means they're making money because otherwise they'd go out of business.
Right.
But so we track all this data and we have it for them and we show it to them. A lot of them don't care. They're like, what. You know, just buy the fish, and I'll just keep doing what you tell me.
So, on the subject of health, and this is probably one of my last questions. On the subject of health, you're feeding the feed that you're providing is wild fish from, you said, from Chile and where else?
So it's the raw materials. None of them are from China. Everything is imported. You've got the only two things that actually matter are the protein source and the fat source, and those all come from wild fish.
Okay. And so wild fish, people who don't know anything about fish do know that mercury is the most dangerous thing that wild fish are have in their systems. So it'd probably be useful to the listeners to talk a little bit about how you make sure that your fish don't have dangerous levels of mercury.
So everything we do, we have checked by third party people. We use Intertek, and they have all the reports of like the mercury levels and everything else, and they're all like, I mean, either non-existent or extremely low. They're way below the Chinese standards, and the Chinese standards are actually pretty impressive.
Wow, that is surprising to hear.
Whether they enforce the standards is a different question, but on paper the standards are very good.
I see.
And, all right, and just what we do, why it's important in terms of how much The amount of the raw fish, or the wild fish, I should say, that we use, we're constantly pushing to use lower and lower amounts.
Mm-hmm.
So traditionally it might be like 50%, and now we're at like between 10 and 20%. The future, the dream, the goal is to get it to be like next to nothing and use completely alternative protein sources.
Mm-hmm.
And that's right now we're working with the different experimenters in Israel, in the U.S., and in Europe, to people that are coming up with different protein alternatives, and that's a whole other exciting avenue.
That is very exciting. It's nice to know that a company that's providing food as their end product is constantly striving to improve it rather than to cut costs.
But here's the thing. So, and I don't want to drag on too long. The only way I see anything really working in the long term is if you have a firm commitment to sustainability, whatever that means. I mean, I have a very defined understanding what that is, but as your sort of engine, it doesn't, people who like talk about it, that we have to do it because we have to do it and that's the end of discussion, they miss the point. I see this as a huge opportunity.
Mm-hmm.
That if you just running things more efficient, or running things more sustainably means more efficient. Running it more efficient means more sustainable. It's just doing it properly, you cut your costs.
Mm-hmm.
And it's just where you look for the opportunities. The thing is, in the aquaculture world or the seafood world or the fish world, like I said, it's a very conservative space. Most of the people are old. They've been making money the same way for so many years. Nobody wants to shake the boat. Nobody wants to rock the boat.
Mm-hmm.
And so part of the reason why we came out to Western China to do this, or why this project takes hold in Western China, is because you've got this blank slate. Anything can happen here, and you've got lots of farms, just the number of farms exploding, and like I said, equally as effortful to go bad as it would be to go good. Mm-hmm. We want to get in, go good. And the last point is, this is going to be the center of production for these kinds of fish for all of China in the next couple of years. Most people don't...
By this, you mean Sichuan or Western China in general?
Western China, but Sichuan, in this mm-hmm. mountain range that I'm speaking about.
Mm-hmm.
It's going to be more and more of these high-value fish, of the sturgeon,
mm-hmm.
Of the salmon trout, or of other salmonids, are going to all be mm-hmm. grown here. And it's gonna blow the other production sites out of the water.
That's a great note to end on. Is there anything else you want to add, or you want to point the listeners in a direction to where they can learn more about Aquafood if this was not enough for them?
Oh, well, I want to plug.
Go plug away.
So we sell fish, and it's really awesome. It's delicious, it's fresh, and we deliver to your door.
You deliver to your door?
We deliver to the door. So
wow.
We do it in all of Chengdu, and now we're just getting rolling in Beijing, Guangzhou, Shanghai.
Do you have a brick and mortar, or?
No brick and mortar.
Okay. So we'll put up the website and the contact information on the show notes for the podcast. If you're interested in fresh fish and you got a buck to spare, this sounds like the best deal in town.
We're always looking for interesting partnerships. I mean, we're learning, and if there are people that know